This year alone, scores of America's killed or missing from wars have been identified. It's part of the ongoing work of the Defense POW/MIA Accounting Agency, which does much of its work here in Hawaii. That group was reorganized several years ago following government investigations, including congressional hearings. Kelly McKegg is a retired Air Force Major General who has run the agency for about 3 months. He's no stranger to Hawaii. He was born and raised here and was commander of the agency as it underwent many institutional changes. He's back in Hawaii this week and spoke with my colleague Bill Dorman about the agency's work.
As I tell people, I think it defines us as a nation. Here we are 40, 60, 70 years later, still searching for our missing Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice.
The challenges of that work, of searching for, recovering, identifying American war dead, how has technology changed the way that that work is done? And when you look ahead, how do you see that developing?
Well, first of all, the mission first began in the 1970s with the Vietnam War. And it wasn't until 2010 that the U.S. Congress directed the Department of Defense to begin searching for, recovering, and identifying missing Americans from World War II, the Korean War, and Cold War. And so in terms of technology, DNA, number one, is one of our seven lines of evidence that we use to identify missing Americans. DNA has advanced greatly over the last four decades to the point where now we're able to take a small sample, and now the Armed Forces DNA Laboratory in Delaware is able to extract DNA from that. That's probably the greatest technological advancement, but our scientists, our anthropologists and archaeologists have also improved their technology and advancements. Particularly, I can give you an example of a clavicle matching algorithm that our scientists have developed. And what this does is it takes an X-ray, and you can take a picture of a recovered clavicle. And I didn't realize this, but your clavicle is like a unique as a fingerprint. And this matching algorithm will sort through 60,000 X-rays and determine a match and prioritize that match based upon the picture of the recovered clavicle. So scientific analysis has improved, technological advancements have improved, and our historians are able to gather information as they sort through the archives.
One of the challenges that you still face in certain areas, as I understand it, is access to areas that still may be politically sensitive. How is that for you, and how are prospects when you look forward on that?
So from the standpoint of this mission, being a humanitarian one in nature, so our efforts are recognized as humanitarian. And as such, this particular mission that we pursue is recognized by our host nation partners. And we work with 29 different countries within the Indo-Pacific region itself. And it serves as a diplomacy tool for not only the Department of Defense, but also the United States government, particularly our friends and partners at the State Department. Every country that we operate in throughout the world, except for one, looks at this as an opportunity to assist the United States on our humanitarian efforts. China, Russia, we have cooperative agreements with them. We work hand in glove with our counterparts with them. The only country that we lack that access to right now is North Korea. And having 5,700 missing Americans north of the DMZ, that obviously presents a particular challenge for us. Now, we were last operating in North Korea in 2005, but have not operated there since because of the irresponsible behavior on the part of the North Korean government.
That underlines also, you mentioned that the agency started with the focus on MIAs in Southeast Asia, but as I understand it, the numbers are still much higher for World War II and the Korean War in terms of identification challenges. Could you explain a bit more about that?
Sure. So right now there are 1,600 missing in from the Vietnam War. For Korea, it's about 7,700. And for World War II, it's a staggering almost 73,000. Now, the challenge is, identifying the research, the archival information, interviewing witnesses, and what have you. So our body of knowledge with the Vietnam War is obviously more robust since we've been working with host nations, with families, with veterans for close to 40, 50 years. In the case of World War II, we're only now beginning to develop the body of research by which to be able to send teams out to excavate and recover the remains, similar to Korea. However, the soil conditions throughout the World War II areas of battle are such that when our teams are going out, we're actually finding significant skeletal remains that haven't been degraded by acidic soil, by the environment, such as we're finding in Southeast Asia. So it's almost counterintuitive that we're able to find more remains should we be able to, again, pinpoint the site in World War II and Korea.
And as you do that, you mentioned working closely with other countries. As you come across remains that are of other countries, that degree of cooperation, how is that and how do you see that developing?
Absolutely excellent. I'll give you Japan as a classic example of that. The Japanese are actively searching for 600,000 Japanese soldiers throughout the Indo-Pacific region. For us, we worked closely with our Japanese counterparts. They send teams all throughout the South Pacific, South Asia, and what have you. And so we cooperate with them. Last week, some Japanese officials came here to repatriate the remains of 13 Japanese soldiers that our teams had recovered. 2 years ago, a Japanese archaeological group had found the remains of 3 American soldiers on Saipan. They called us. We were able to recover those remains and bring them back here. So we work hand in glove with the Japanese government. We're very pleased, again, with the cooperation that we get from the government of Japan. We conduct forensic scientific exchanges with them, as we do with other countries. And it just serves, again, as a platform and just another tool within the strength of the alliance between the Japanese and United States governments.
You know, I think you've mentioned several things that might be surprising to our listeners or may be something that they did not know about. Is there something else about the work of your agency that you think is not perhaps understood by the American people or perhaps a bit misunderstood by many?
I think from the standpoint of and the general awareness, I think for most Americans, when they find out that a local individual from their hometown was lost in World War II, say, for instance, found and recovered and brought home, the sense of community, the sense of belonging that repatriation evokes is absolutely incredible. A, they recognize the sacrifice that the individual made, but then they are connected to the story, and every story is a unique one. And despite the fact that spouses, siblings have passed on, those memories and those stories have been passed on to second and third generation relatives. And so it evokes a visceral appreciation that the United States is still doing this. And it also sends a signal to those currently in uniform that they will not be left behind, that this nation will do everything humanly possible to ensure that they are brought home should they lose their life and pay the ultimate sacrifice in battle. I think that's the biggest thing. And in the case of families who have lost loved ones, Gold Star families, we have about 90% of their family reference samples on file, their DNA, enabling us to, again, identify and match remains that we may find. Similarly, for Korea, the numbers are high. But for World War II, it's still hovering at about 12% of the losses have a family reference sample on hand. And so it's an awareness from our standpoint that if individuals believe they have a loved one or know they have a loved one lost in World War II and have not provided the Department of Defense a family reference DNA sample, we would encourage them to do so because it allows us to be able to make that DNA match.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
Bill, I very much appreciate the opportunity and the support that you and your listeners give to this tremendous, noble mission, humanitarian one in scope.
Kelly McKeag is a retired Major General in the U.S. Air Force, a graduate of Damien High School, and as a civilian, now is the director of the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency.